This afternoon on All Things Considered, we're going to hear about a group of exonerees in Dallas who are working together to try and free wrongly convicted people. But these are actually tougher cases than many of the ones we may have heard about before. I'm speaking now with reporter Michael May, who has reported the piece that we're going to hear this afternoon. And Michael, I want to just find out what's different about this group and the particular cases that they are tackling.
Well, of course, what's the most different about this group is, you know, far from being law enforcement, you know, former law enforcement or actually law enforcement, you know, or who are usually detectives or investigators, you know, they're quite the opposite. They spent years and years in prison. And but in a way, they are really the most qualified to take on these cases because that's all they thought about for years and years was how to get themselves, you know, vindicated and out of prison. So they know how to investigate these cases. They know how to work them through the system, perhaps most importantly. And they're passionate about them. You know, they know how it feels to be sitting in a prison cell night after night knowing you're innocent and, you know, unable to sleep and, you know, just, you can imagine just turning your case over and over in your head. And so they know what that feels like, and they want to make sure that people who are dealing with that right now are getting out. They're focusing on non-DNA cases, and the reason they're doing that is because the leader of the group, Chris Scott, is a non-DNA case himself. And when he was trying to get himself out of prison, he had a prison lawyer say that he had a 1,000,001 chance of getting out because non-DNA cases are extremely difficult. You know, with the DNA, you test it. If it comes back not matching the convicted man, then you pretty much have a clear road to freedom. Non-DNA, it's you have to find another way to do it. There's many other ways, but they're all more difficult than that.
So is there a particular non-DNA case that this group of exonerees is working on right now?
Yeah, I mean, they're actually working on several cases, but the first case that they took on was a man named Jimmy Osteen. Osteen was on the same prison unit as exoneree Chris Scott. And, you know, they spent basically a decade telling each other their stories. And so Chris really, you know, knows that Jimmy Osteen, who he calls Big O, is, you know, he knows Big O well. He believes his story and he wants to get his friend out. So that's the first one they've taken on.
We're talking about non-DNA cases. So these are all people who are in prison because they were convicted of a crime based on evidence other than DNA evidence. So how did these people usually get convicted in these cases if there was no DNA evidence in the case from the beginning?
The majority of the Dallas exonerees, the ones that I've met, were convicted on faulty eyewitness identification. In Jimmy Osteen's case, it's eyewitness identification. In many cases, it's eyewitness identification. You know, according to the law, eyewitness testimony is the strongest evidence you can present. And that's become really troubling because in recent years, both, you know, the science of psychology and the science of neuroscience have shown that memory is not at all like a videotape. Eyewitness identifications can be wrong and are very often wrong. And that's been, you know, unequivocally proven because of DNA. I mean, most of the guys I've met, the Dallas exonerees, were convicted on eyewitness identification, often shockingly in rape cases by the victim, and then to find out that the DNA doesn't match and it was in fact another perpetrator. So if it can be wrong in a rape case where, you know, obviously a very, you know, where the victim and the perpetrator have plenty of time to see each other, you can imagine that in other cases where people are seeing the perpetrator perhaps from across the street or, you know, 50, 100 yards away, it becomes even more problematic.
So talking about eyewitness testimony, have there been any changes in state law, in Texas state law in recent years about eyewitness testimony? Because as you say, it's, you know, more and more cases are coming out where it turns out there were convictions based on eyewitness testimony that was just flat wrong.
Yes. And in fact, the Dallas exonerees have had a huge role in reforming the law on that. One of the first things they did as a group, there's 32 exonerees in Dallas, and they're all part of a support group. Some of them are more active than others, but they get together once a month. And at first, you know, it was kind of a self-help group just dealing with their struggles. But they quickly realized that they couldn't deal with their own struggles without changing Texas law. And they started lobbying the legislature. First, they did it to improve their own compensation packages from the state. They actually have now, Texas has the most generous exoneration compensation in the country because of their lobbying. And then they moved on to really reforming criminal justice. And, you know, once they realized the kind of power their stories have with lawmakers, last session, they helped pass a bill to reform eyewitness identification. And what the bill did was make every district in Texas basically state what their eyewitness procedure is. And if they weren't going to follow best practices, they had to explain why. That's my understanding of it in any case. I mean, they didn't force districts to change how they did it, but they forced them to have a procedure on the books. And what's important about that is that if they're not following best practices, it's now stated and defense lawyers can bring that up. They can talk to prosecutors and detectives and say, why aren't you following best procedures? And it allows them to cast doubt to the jury about eyewitness identification. Because at the end of the day, it really is up to juries to decide whether someone's guilty or not and to decide how much weight to put on eyewitness identification.
So in these non-DNA cases that this group of Dallas exonerees that they're looking at, since there is no DNA evidence, obviously, where do these new investigations start? I mean, what is getting looked at since there is no DNA evidence to test or examine? What is being looked at then, again, this go around?
They have to do shoe leather investigations, and so they can be extremely time consuming. They can take a decade. I mean, they can take a long time. But I think it comes down to, you know, one of a couple ways to prove this. I mean, you can find the actual perpetrator and have them confess, which is what happened in Chris Scott's case. Obviously, that's difficult and rare. You can find eyewitnesses to recant their testimony, which does happen with some frequency, usually people who are pressured with some sort of deal by unscrupulous prosecutors. Or you can find some other kind of evidence that proves that the convicted man couldn't have been there, you know, some sort of proof of that supports their alibi, you know, just real detective work.
Obviously, their efforts by this group of exonerees to reexamine and reopen some of these cases, but doesn't it take someone sort of within the system, law enforcement or a district attorney or someone to say, yes, we are going to actually officially reopen a case? I mean, don't they need cooperation from somebody else too?
Well, it sure helps. I mean, you can fight things through the system, but that's really difficult. When you look at non-DNA exonerations, I'd say a lot of them are done with cooperation of law enforcement. And they often are also in less high-profile crimes. Like if you look at, you know, DNA exonerations, you're seeing people get off, you know, death row and capital cases, life imprisonment, rape. You know, I think it's a lot easier if it's a nonviolent crime or something like that to let someone off that's non-DNA. I think a lot of prosecutors and such get really nervous when it's a really high-profile case. In the case of the Dallas exonerees, they do have an advocate and a close relationship with the district attorney in Dallas, Craig Watkins.
So, Michael, you told us a little bit earlier about the case of Jimmy Osteen, Big O, that this group is trying to help right now. What is happening with his case right now? Where do things stand with that?
They've been working on the Jimmy Osteen case for about a year, and they haven't broken the case yet. They've visited Jimmy Osteen in prison. In fact, I was along for that. And he makes a very, very convincing case for himself. You know, the eyewitness identification was vague, didn't match him perfectly. But these cases are extremely difficult, and they haven't had, you know, the kind of break in the case that they'll need to get him out. They haven't had an eyewitness recant the testimony. They haven't found a person who actually did the crime to confess. But they're certainly not giving up. Chris Scott is going around and interviewing every eyewitness that was, you know, that helped convict Jimmy Osteen. He's talked to the district attorney in Dallas, Craig Watkins, about the case, and Craig Watkins has assured them that they will look into it. So there's progress being made, but this is a long, long haul. This could take years, and they might not get him out, but they're also opening other cases. I'm convinced that they will eventually get someone out. I mean, the dedication these guys have is profound.
Reporter Michael May will hear a piece from him on All Things Considered this afternoon about a group of exonerees in Dallas who are working together to try and free wrongly convicted people. And Michael, thank you for talking with us today and giving us the background on this story.
Thanks, Jennifer.